Donc moi, c'est la même chose. And also, they are confident in general. Thank you. And the documentation is being distributed. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. I can just say that I was given the post based on my good looks and not on my intellect. So you, unlike my colleagues, so you'll excuse me if I don't get everything right. I'm also from a public school, so I believe in straight talking. If I don't use the correct terms, please help me out. Chairperson, with your permission, we've handed out another presentation which were not made available to the members before, and I just briefly, quickly want to run through it because it will answer a lot of questions that members have raised so far. And thereafter, we will continue with the rest of our presentations. I must warn members up front that there won't be enough time. Some of the things that we want to discuss today, especially as far as unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, takes a lot of time. So we might not get to everything today, and we might have to carry some of it forward to a next meeting, which the chair will guide us on.
It will be next week, but like I indicated, after this meeting, it will be communicated to you, I think today or tomorrow, but I know it's next week, Tuesday or Wednesday, either of those 2 days. So whatever we'll not be able to deal with today, we'll be able to deal with next week.
Thank you, Chair. So what I would like to do is just highlight some of the areas that the roles that National Treasury play. Immediately after that, my colleague, Chase, I will be doing a lot of the things that is in his presentation as well, but he will just continue and highlight to you the progress that has been made regarding compliance with the Public Finance Management Act. That's just the agenda. In the interest of time, I'm just going to skip some of the slides, not go through all of them in detail. If we look at what the responsibility of National Treasury is, there's a number of units. Not all of them are equally as important to this committee, but I'll highlight those areas that specifically is very important to the committee. One, we promote national government fiscal policy framework and coordinate macroeconomic policy. That's just basically meeting with the G6 and those kind of people, making sure that our economy is in line with the rest of the world, etc. Coordinate intergovernmental financial and fiscal arrangements. That's the way we deal with the three tiers of government and how those three tiers link with one another. Manage the budget preparation process. As you know, that's probably the biggest thing. That's where we have a party once a year. Unfortunately, due to cost-cutting measures, we only have tea and biscuits, those of you that were here last year. We've got to set an example. Exercise control over implementation of the national budget. Once we have pronounced on the budget, we actually have to give out the money to the various departments to do their work. Facilitate implementation of the Annual Division of Revenue Act, DORA, that's where we give the money to the various departments. Monitor implementation of provincial budgets, so we do play an oversight role as far as that is concerned. Promote and enforce transparency and effective management of REAL. Throughout the presentation, there's some acronyms. Those of you that's new, REAL stands for Revenue, Expenditure, Assets, and Liabilities. in bookkeeping terms, that's the balance sheet and the income statement, basically, that we're talking about. And then perform the functions of National Treasury in terms of the PFMA. That's a very important one. That's where our office lies, Office of the Accountant General, as well as the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. The Office of the Chief Procurement Officer is very vital to this committee. They will be making a presentation next week as well. Mr. Kenneth Brown, who's the Chief Procurement Officer for the Republic, he's a very animated person. If you listen to him, you will really enjoy his presentations. He tells you first how bad it is, and then he tells you how he's going to heal the world, and the way that he speaks, you will really enjoy him. So what is it that we actually do? First of all, we prescribe uniform treasury norms and standards. Now that is important, but as my colleague has said earlier today, we basically provide the guidelines. We say how things should be done. The Auditor General then goes and audits and makes sure that departments comply with those norms and standards. But the setting of the norms and standards, that normally comes from us. So if there's something that the committee feels should be tightened up, the Auditor General themselves normally cannot do that because they test whether people comply or not. We are the ones that must ensure that departments comply. So if the committee feels that there's some areas that need tightened up, you must call us to account and we will see how we can address that concern for you as best as we can. We enforce the PFMA and grab in national departments. Just to explain a little bit, those of you that come from the private sector, in the old days there used to be GAAP, generally accepted accounting practice. Nowadays it's IFRS, International Financial Reporting Standards. We use what we call GRAP, Generally Recognized Accounting Practice, which comes basically, which is the financial framework that we use in government. It's important, we're going to speak about it a little bit later as well. And the reason for that is we're trying to get a uniform standard so that wherever you go, anywhere in the world, everybody will, all the financial statements will look the same so that you will be able to evaluate them and compare them to your own ones as well. We monitor and assess the implementation of the PFMA. That's Jace next to me. She's my responsibility and we'll speak about that later. We assist build capacity for effective and efficient financial management. Members have raised this and I'll speak about it a little bit later with one of my colleagues. Gershon is acting in that position. It's their responsibility to make sure that the people have the right skills. Investigate any system of financial management and internal control. There's a number of areas that fall underneath those three, and I'll talk about each one of them. We intervene by taking appropriate steps, which may include the invoking of Section 100 of the Constitution. That's Limpopo, for example, those of you that's new. We use Section 100 to intervene, take over the management of certain departments. So as National Treasury, that's a responsibility that we have in terms of the Act. And then very important that LARTS catch all phrase that allows us to do a lot of things, do anything further that is necessary to fulfill its responsibilities. So you see that in terms of the PFMA, we have great power. And we all know the saying that with great power comes great responsibility. The great responsibility is with this committee. The committee must guide us, you know, it's very easy to abuse power and therefore this committee plays a very vital role in what we do, specifically we as the Office of the Accountant General. I'm going to skip some of the slides because some of them apply to municipalities which is not really relevant today, but if any of the members wishes to engage with me afterwards, you're more than welcome. I also have some business cards which I can hand out to those that want it. So if I can speak specifically about the Office of the Accountant General, and the reason for that is because the Accountant General is the office in the National Treasury that this committee will be dealing with most, as well as the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. Our role is to facilitate accountability, governance, and oversight in the public sector. We do it by promoting the effective, efficient, economical, and transparent management of real in the South African public sector. Remember real revenue, expenditure, assets and liabilities. We list the functions there. I'm going to speak to each one of them individually. Technical support services, first of all, that's Lindy on my left-hand side. Her job is to develop policies, guidelines and frameworks on matters related to accounting, internal audit and risk management. And the reason that's important, she sets standards. All those guidelines that the Auditor General was speaking about, which they check, Lindy basically does that job. She develops those standards. you'll see there that the second bullet under functions, participate in the ITSAS board for the development of local and international public sector accounting standards. Just ITSAS, International Public Sector Auditing Standards, Accounting Standards. International Public Sector Accounting Standards. Reason why that is important, as I said earlier, is whenever you go, if you go on a study tour, for example, to a different country and you want to compare their financial statements to us, we are trying to make it worldwide standard uniform so that wherever you go, you can see and you can compare, and everybody must be the same. So that's what IPSAS, their responsibility. They are board, they're based in Canada, but it's an international board and they set the standards for all of government as far as accounting is concerned. Development of accounting internal audit and risk management related frameworks, policies and guidelines, we spoke about that, develops strategies to migrate from cash to accrual accounting. I want to highlight that specific to the members because it's one of the things that you're going to have to monitor very closely going forward is the migration from cash accounting to accrual accounting. We're not ever going to go to full accrual accounting because a government doesn't lend itself to full accrual accounting. It lends itself, accrual accounting lends itself more to entities that's got profits, etc. In government, we're not trying to make profit. We don't really have income. We only have an equitable share in many cases. Therefore, it doesn't lend itself. But we have to move away from pure cash. Now, just by way of introduction, for members to understand, many years ago when we as a government were on a full cash basis, what would happen is, for example, you would buy a building for 100 million rand, and it will be expensed through your income statement. And it's gone, you know, and there's no record of it after. Of course, there's some record, but not enough record. It's not reflected in the books of account at its true value. And moving to accrual accounting, it's now shown as an asset in the books of account so that people can see that there's an asset that must be reflected. And there's a number of other things which I'm not going to go into, but we can discuss it at length. Also, they contribute towards the development of a chart of accounts for PFMA and NFMA compliant institutions. That's what we call SCOAS, have a chart of accounts. Basically, it sets the rules so that every government entity reports in the same way. So if we buy food today for the committee, is that entertainment? Is that catering? You know, we must have a uniform standard so that everybody treats it the same way. It must be accounted the same way. If you don't account for it in the same way, that's when people start hiding certain expenses. You don't know where that expense is reported. So that's part of Lindy's responsibility. Accounting support and reporting. Provide accounting and reporting support to PFMA and MFMA compliant institutions. Also manage the NRF and RDP. I'm not going to speak to all the slides. There's a number of acronyms. The most important thing to know is what this unit does is provides accounting guidelines. So when it comes to year-end and departments don't know how to do their financial statements, they will provide guidance. They also do the consolidation of the country. So all the expenses of all the departments will be aggregated, put together so that we can see as a country how much we spend, how does it compare to the budget that was announced, where is the shortcomings, etc. Part of that is the NRF, the National Revenue Fund. The National Revenue Fund is basically the bank account of government, although it's made up of a number of bank accounts. But in essence, what it boils down to is the bank account. So when we collect tax, the money goes into that bank account. When we give it to departments to spend, it goes out of that fund. So it's a very important fund to see how the cash actually flows through government. And then you see there that we said there at the bottom, prepare consolidated financial statements, as I mentioned. Internal audit support, I would like to ask the committee to also really focus on this area during the tenure of the committee. It's something that, as the Auditor General has highlighted, that we have not got the full value from internal audit. We feel that they can do a lot more. Now, part of what we are going to do this year from National Treasury side, we're going to propose some new actions that needs to be taken, which is not traditional internal audit functions. And some of them might come and say, but this is not the role of internal audit. Yes, we know. But sometimes it's important things to do. And internal audit, as they always say, is a management tool. So if you are a management tool, then you must assist management first and foremost. one of the things we're going to do, for example, you would have seen that the Auditor General highlighted some areas where outside audit institutions help them, the private sector helped them, and still the financial statements were not correct until the Auditor General came and helped them. Often when you ask private sector companies, why do you charge so much money and then you still get qualified? They say, well, there's no documentation. One way to solve this is to make sure that every month the documentation that the Auditor General are going to require must be recorded, must be put away, so that you know immediately when there's a problem. You don't wait until the end of the year when the Auditor General come and then say some documents are missing. And we think, for example, internal audit can help us with that. They can go and check every month that this audit file is prepared. Now, don't prepare it right at the end. Prepare it every month as you go along. So this year we are going to make a number of recommendations. That's only one of them. There's a number of things that we're going to do to strengthen internal audit. And we would ask that the committee, whenever you engage with departments, you pay particular attention to this area to make sure that we as government get value for money. The risk management unit, basically you've got to look at all the risk of the department. I'm not going to go into detail. Bear in mind that the fact that there's a risk doesn't mean that there's a problem. Sometimes you will know from Economics 101, the greater the risk, the bigger the reward. And sometimes we might take a risk because we might see a reward in that. Although as government, normally we shouldn't be doing that, but in certain cases we might do it. So the important thing there is just to know that there should be a risk assessment that's being done regularly. Specialized audit services is a unique one. That's another one of our crime fighting units. That's our forensic unit that's housed within National Treasury. We have, in terms of the PFMA, a mandate that says that we may investigate basically anything to do with government. We work closely with a number of other organizations like the Hawks and the SATs and the NPA, etc. That's basically to make sure that we don't duplicate. We don't want to have three or four different units investigating the same thing. But the reason that it is important is that if the committee picks up something in any department which they feel that might need investigation, you are welcome to approach us. We cannot promise that we will investigate everything because, like everybody else, we have limited resources. But certainly we can make sure that it's channeled to the right department or right unit to investigate, like the Hawks or SATs or whichever one. Then Jace, next to me, he does a number of things. He's Mr. PFMA. To a large degree, helped in the preparation of the PFMA. He basically just updated the Treasury regulations. Not completely on his own. He did have some help from some other colleagues as well. But if there's an interpretation in the PFMA that members are uncertain about, you're welcome to contact him and he will give you clarity. He also works on a number of other things. For example, one of the questions that was asked earlier is about members that have transgressed. So we are working on a financial misconduct guideline, as the Deputy Auditor General has indicated. That will guide people to say, once people have transgressed and you found out, what is the next step? What is the action that you need to take? And how should it be taken? MFMA implementation I'm not going to speak about because it's not really applicable, but simply to say that we have, similar to the PFMA, we have a unit that focuses on municipalities specifically. Then there's a unit which is not mentioned yet before I get to capacity building, which is our IT systems, Bobby Marker, that runs it. We are busy with the upgrading of that. You might have heard of the IFMS. It's a very important system, and again, it's something that this committee should question us about every time that we appear before the committee. Not because it's a high value, not because it's been long outstanding, but because it's crucial to the running of financial matters in this country. It's a system that will replace all the old legacy systems like BAS, BASEL, and LOGIS, and therefore it's very important that we get this right and implement it as soon as possible. And Lenny is assisting with that as well. Let me just go back one. We have a unit called capacity building. There was a question earlier about what are we doing to assist departments, municipalities, etc., as far as people is concerned, making sure that they have the right skills. Well, this is the unit that does it. They have a number of initiatives that they do with DPSA and the School of Government. We also have a lot of donor funding. There's a number of programs that is being run, more so on municipal level than on national and provincial level, but also on national and provincial level. There is the minimum competency framework that has been developed that tells people that this is the minimum standards that you must comply with in order for you to do your job effectively. That slide basically show you how all the various units interact between one another. I'm not going to speak to that now. Then just we took the liberty of highlighting some of the areas that we feel as a committee you might want to focus on. Obviously, there's a general report from the Auditor General, which you will get every year from the AG. There's the matters raised in the individual reports of departments that you need to interrogate. Compliance of laws and regulations, as the Deputy Auditor General has said, it's very important that we comply with certain regulations, etc. That fourth bullet, I just want to spend a little bit of time on it. We are going to have an in-depth session with you as soon as possible, hopefully today, but if not today, then we'll have it later, about fully understanding what unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure is. And the simply the most important task that I can give you or that I can ask you to do is not to make up your mind beforehand, but to interrogate each instance on its own. There might well be instances where something is unauthorized, but it's been done after good deliberation and people thought about it. If I can use an example, on municipal level, for example, remember what does unauthorized mean? It means you have exceeded your budget for something that it shouldn't have been exceeded for. Now, if on municipal level you had an earthquake, for example, and that particular municipality did not budget for any earthquakes during that year. It's not something that they would budget for. Now, because of the earthquake, they need to take some actions. They need to help their citizens. Some of them might be without homes, etc. Then the council might well take a conscious decision. I'm going to incur additional costs. I'm going to go to the bank and get an overdraft. So the fact that it's unauthorized expenditure in itself does not mean that it's bad. We report on it because it's public funds, and we want to make sure that every citizen knows exactly what happened to their funds. But the mere fact that it's unauthorized doesn't make it bad in itself. You need to interrogate every instance that happens. The same with irregular expenditure. We have heard examples. Some of them all of them are bad, because it means we have not complied. But some of them are worse than others. So, for example, we had instances of nepotism where no tender process was followed, a tender was given to a friend or a family member for 5 times the price that you would normally pay. That's a bad instance. In those cases, people must go to jail. Then you have other instances where all the right procedure was followed. Process was published, the tender went out for public notice, it was an open tender. Everything was done, quotes were received, the lowest one was selected, all of that was done correctly. But on the day that the contract must be signed, the DG was overseas, he forgot to sign the delegation of authority, so the DDG must have signed the contract, which means the whole contract is irregular, the whole amount. We report on it. But maybe it's not as bad, because we still got full value. So that's what I'm saying, you must interrogate, make sure that you understand the right circumstances, because once you have found that there's irregular expenditure, then we need to decide what is the next action. And by the way, there is prescribed action. You cannot simply regularize it. You cannot simply say, we as a council, we as a department, etc., we accept and therefore now it's regular. It doesn't work that way. You must still report it. It must still be reported so that the citizens, the users of the financial statements can understand what happened and where it comes from. Transversal systems and financial risk deals mostly with IFMS, as we spoke about. Supply chain, my colleague will speak about next week. Major financial losses suffered by government and corporate governance and ethics. some of the areas that you should place specific focus on, issues of financial probity, fraud and corruption, for example, disposal of significant state assets, tenders of national importance, that's like Praza and Transnet and those kind of tenders, big tenders that's got national importance, condonation of irregular expenditure, you always have to question why it was condoned. Make sure that sufficient reason was given to you, because that's the easiest way, as we heard members say, that's the easiest way to hide certain expenditure. You just condone it and it disappears. But it must appear in the financial statements first. Consolidated financial statements of government, that's what we prepare so that you can see the complete picture of what happened to the money of the country. And information sharing with other committees, because some things are reported to other committees as well. So we recommend that you interface with those committees as well as we go along. Members, those are just on a high level some of the things that I wanted to tell you about what we do. Jason is going to tell you specifically about BFMA implementation and how far we are. I'm not sure if you want to give questions now or whether you want to see his presentation first, because the two are closely linked. It combines with one another.
Comrades, why don't we get to the other presentation so we can then have a complete picture? Do we have copies of that? Oh, okay. Tumbi.
Chair, and once again, good morning, honorable members. My presentation this morning would be on the progress made with the with compliance of the Public Finance Management Act. Well, the structure of my presentation, I'm basically going to touch on briefly on National Treasury's mandate with regard to monitoring and enforcement of the Public Finance Management Act. I'll talk a bit on the financial management capability maturity model, which is a tool that National Treasury has developed to monitor PFMA compliance in PFMA compliant institutions. Then I'll also touch a bit on the audit outcomes up to the 2012-2013 audit, but most of it has been dealt with by the Deputy Auditor General in the previous presentation. Then I'll talk about one of the significant non-compliance issues related to payments within 30 days, and as well as National Treasury's interventions to assist departments with progress, with the implementation of the PFMA. Well, in terms of Section 6.2 of the PFMA, National Treasury has a mandate to monitor and enforce the Act in all institutions, as well as to assist departments in, with their capacity development to ensure compliance with the Act. We have used various methods to monitor and enforce the PFMA. Initially, we had started out with questionnaires to departments. Thereafter, we used a document called the Normative Measures for Financial Management. And then we also used the general reports of the Auditor General, as well as the Financial Management Capability Maturity Model. Now, to give you a brief, to give you a synopsis of the Capability Maturity Model, it is a model that's based on the Canadian model, which was also called the Financial Management Capability Maturity Model. Now, many years ago, the Systems Engineering Institute developed a maturity model to assess its institution's ability to develop software solutions. And then this model was subsequently replicated by the by various other institutions with the development of maturity models. There's a strategic management maturity model, there's a human resource management maturity model, a project management maturity model, and as well as the an internal audit maturity model. Now, the Canadian Auditor General used the maturity model initially as an auditing tool, and the South African Auditor General also at one stage used the model to an extent to assess the maturity levels of PFMA compliant institutions. And it was around 2008 that the National Treasury agreed with the Auditor General that we would take the maturity model and convert it to a financial management tool to assess the financial health of PFMA compliant institutions. Now the model has different levels of maturity, and it's essentially intended to identify gaps in the control environment and to basically improve the control environment. And it basically gives you a dipstick assessment of the financial health in an institution. Now the model has six levels, being the startup level where there is no control framework. Here basically a department doesn't have policies and procedures, there's no risk management, there's no internal audit unit that has been set up, there's no audit committees, and so forth. The second level, the development level, here there is a control framework, but it hasn't been implemented properly. You'll find maybe a department has policies and procedures, but it hasn't been approved and it's not yet implemented. Or maybe a internal audit unit has been set up, but it's not effective. Now, at the control level, the focus is more on compliance and control. At this level, basically, the department has policies and procedures. It is being implemented through the both in letter and in spirit. There's an internal audit unit that's effective. The audit general can place reliance on the activities of internal audit. There's an audit committee that's meeting regularly in terms of the act, and is also adding value to the governance process. Then the fourth level is the management level, which basically integrates the financial and non-financial information and focuses on how best resources are used within an institution. Management can basically use this information to make effective management decisions, considering that they have an in-depth assessment of both the financial and non-financial information in the institution. And it also it focuses on whether the performance information is clearly defined in terms of quantity, quality, timeliness, and whether there's corrective plans for any deviations from the performance targets. The level five, being the managed level, is focused on the use of resources with effective results. Managed basically use management information to make effective decisions. There's external review in institutions. It could be non-governmental organizations as well as other oversight bodies. And basically the information is used to improve the general or the overall performance of an institution. At the sixth level, the level six, it's a continuous improvement of the environment and continuous learning. So basically all levels, or from the level three upwards, there's continuous improvement in all the practices. Now, from all our previous assessments, we have found that departments are basically at a level three at this point in time. So we have done a comprehensive review of questions in the capability maturity model to basically assess institutions up to the levels four and five. Just to give you an indication of what the maturity model is all about, it provides best practices, measures, standards, and it creates improvement paths. It assesses financial management in an institution at a particular point in time. It identifies areas of excellence as well as areas of concern. It identifies gaps in the control environment with a view to making improvements. And with regard to the maturity, an institution that is mature, that is operating at level 3 or 4, in level 3 in terms of financial management, and level 5 in terms of both your financial management and non-financial management. It's regarded as a mature institution with basically low risk, high predictability, and the converse is also true as well. Now, the methodology that we use in the assessments is basically it's a self-assessment tool which has to be completed by both CFOs as well as staff assigned by the CFOs, and CFOs are required to sign off on those sponsors. There's a high-level validation through reference to external sources of information when we receive the information for purposes of analysis. Then we also compare it with other information that we have, our engagement with the department, as well as the reports from the Auditor General. The revised tool provides for an internal audit validation where the accounting officer can request internal audit to validate the responses of the CFO. But one of the significant limitations of the model is that it relies on the accuracy of information that is provided by the CFOs, and it relies on their honesty and integrity. Now, the results of the assessments are communicated to the chief financial officers together with a heat map. They are able to develop strategies as well as corrective plans to address deficiencies that have been identified in the model. There's strategic support plans that can be developed for identified departments. I will talk about strategic support plans in a subsequent slide. It also provides capacity needs, you know, for the development of any learning frameworks or guidelines. And the information is also used to an extent by the Auditor General just to get a helicopter view of, you know, what the status of financial management is in a particular department. And the information is always also quite valuable for internal audit and risk management. Well, after we conduct these assessments, we normally compile a detailed report both to the both to yourself, Standing Committee on Public Accounts, as well as the Standing Committee on Finance, and we provide individual reports to the various departments. Now, the status of the model is basically, as I indicated previously, we've done a comprehensive assessment of the review of the questions in the model. The new questions are now, are able to extend it to assess constitutional institutions and public entities listed in Schedule 3A and 3C. And it's also be able to measure the spectrum of financial management in a department, you know, from leadership, governance, performance management, to the entire spectrum of financial management. It contains 5 modules related to governance and financial management. And the new model, we're trying to base it on an electronic platform based on the model of the management performance assessment tool that's being rolled out by the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation. Now, these are the different modules in the capability maturity model. It's governance, performance management, financial management, supply chain management, and reporting. Now, after completing the capability maturity model, basically the tool will be able to give you an indication as to, you know, where financial management is heading in a particular department or public entity. Now, as I indicated in my introduction, I'll also touch a bit on the audit outcomes, but I think the WO General has covered the audit outcomes to quite a large extent, so as here, with your permission, I'll skip these slides. But then, you know, to highlight the key findings and to iterate the key findings for these in the audits are poor governance processes in departments, failure to report effectively on predetermined objectives, the lack of proper internal controls, the non-compliance with laws and regulations, one of them being the payments within 30 days, there's poor systems to manage revenue, expenditure, assets and liabilities, and the findings, you know, are quite consistent with those in the capability maturity model. Now, you know, I thought it prudent that we touch on the on the payments within 30 days, which is becoming quite a problem with the with departments, and especially the late payment of invoices to suppliers, having a serious impact on their cash flows. And we normally submit reports to the Forum of South African Directors General every 2 months, and an annual report is also produced to them on payment of invoices within 30 days. And you'll find in this particular slide, this slide focuses on the number of invoices that have not been paid within 30 days. And these are the average is basically 30,894 invoices for the last calendar year that has not been paid, or basically for the first 4 months, that have not been paid timely. And if you look at the value of those invoices, it's almost half a billion rand that on average has not been paid for the first 4 months. And you see there's a trend. In January there was, basically half a billion. In February it came down a bit to 327 million. And then in March it goes up to 479 million. And it tells you a bit of a story. From January, departments want to start paying all the invoices to ensure that their budgets are spent, and also in March, contributing to the basically fiscal dumping, to ensure that their monies are spent. Then you find in April, tells you another story as well, the 582 million average spikes, and this gives you an indication that departments have been holding back on invoices and paying it in the new financial year. And on one hand, government develops the national growth plan, the national development plan, all with the intention of creating jobs and stimulating the economy. And the SMME sector is quite critical. They play an important role in creating employment. But then as government. On the other hand, we don't pay our invoices on time, which is becoming counterproductive. And with the result that many of these SMMEs are having so much of difficulties financially that many of them have to retrench employees, or some of them even go to the extent of closing down, all because they have a poor cash flow because of services in the government that are not being paid on time. And it's not that departments cannot pay their invoices on time. Just last week on one of the Johannesburg talk radio stations, the MEC of Economic Development in Gauteng, he has indicated that the invoices in his department must be paid within 15 days. It's not negotiable. And I think he had the same approach when he was an MEC in one of the previous departments. I think it's 5 days that he said in his new department, because he's Department of Economic Development, and he's quite interested in stimulating the housing economy as well as ensuring the sustainability of these small businesses. And he has indicated that he's given his department an instruction, they need to put systems in place, 5 days. He can't see why invoices cannot be paid in 5 days. And this also, Chair and Honourable Members, it's also leading to the corruption factor, where this was also mentioned when we had discussions with suppliers through the Public Service Commission. Suppliers even complained that officials were even having invoices in their drawers, and then they had to pay basically to get those invoices out the drawers, to get it processed. So this is really a problem. And as I said, we have the growth part, we have the national development plan, all wanting to create jobs, but then we get involved in this type of practices that is really, really counterproductive. Then if you look at the reasons why departments don't pay their invoices on time, and this is one of the significant non-compliance issues, basically non-payment of invoices in 30 days. And if you look at all these reasons, about 80% or 90% of these reasons are all internal problems. Unresolved supply chain management related queries. This is an internal issue. Unresolved invoice discrepancies. I mean, when an invoice is received, immediately the person is receiving the goods. If you find the discrepancy, you send the invoice immediately. You don't wait for 30 days or 40 days before you do that. The timely approvals of invoices not done. In some cases, you find that the excuse is given that there's the person that was supposed to have approved it was on leave or study leave. It's not acceptable. Tax clearance certificate issues that an institution does not have a proper tax clearance certificate. But that you do when you award the bid. You don't wait until the time when you need to pay. And then, the IT system issues. Sometimes the BAS logo or something is slow, so maybe that's okay. That's an external factor. But inadequate internal capacity, inadequate budget. That, you know, indicated in one of my previous slides, I showed the spikes. And then delay in submission of invoices for processing. So basically, one of the cost centers don't send invoices to supply chain management, financial management on time. So these, you look at all these, I mean, with the exception of the, and also look at the banking details. I mean, you at the time when you list the supplier onto your database, you'll have all these banking information. So, you know, if departments don't sort these type of issues, poor suppliers are at risk of closing down. Now, so if you look at the interventions that National Treasury has to assist departments with the improvement of financial management, as the Accountant General has indicated, we have conducted an extensive review of the Treasury regulations, mainly to strengthen accountability of financial management by institutions. Previously, most of the provisions were applicable most to departments and constitutional institutions, but we have extended these provisions now to also include the Schedule 3A and 3C public entities, and we've also included provisions that where local and international best practices have been introduced in the Treasury regulations. Now, with the strategic support plans, where a department has qualified audit support, the National Treasury develops a strategic support plan, which is basically an agreement with the institution signed by the Accountant General and the Accounting Officer of the department, both parties agreeing on matters to be addressed in order to improve the financial management or clear the or improve the audit outcomes, whereby the Accountant General will provide the technical support, whereas the department needs to provide the warm bodies to ensure that these whatever is agreed upon is executed. Then there's also been development of a capacity development strategy. This was developed to create an enabling environment to ensure that there's effective capacity building in the public sector, especially in the financial management arena. It was also developed to empower a cadre of committed and professional public servants, as well as to interact quite closely with the National School of Government for the development of learning programs. Then we've also set up a public sector expert practice committees. Now these are financial management experts from the various national departments and provincial treasuries, and to render advice on various issues related to financial management. Now, the committees that have been set up is for revenue, expenditure, assets and liabilities, for supply chain management, for financial accounting, for management accounting. So these committees are also adding value to the capacity building initiatives of government. Then the National Treasury is also a training academy for the training of chartered accountants. We've had quite a good success rate with the passing of our trainees. I think a year two ago, one of our trainees came in the top five of the board exam. So I think 11 out of 12 trainees passed the board one. So I think the National Treasury is quite a good training academy for the chartered accountants. Then there's also a risk management forum that has been established. Now, risk management being one of the responsibilities of accounting officers. So this forum has been established for all chief risk officers. So basically they share ideas for peer learning and sharing of experiences and, addressing issues of common concern. Then we have a supply chain management and fraud prevention. Here the National Treasury has established a chief procurement officer, an office of the chief procurement officer, and one of his primary responsibilities is to regulate supply chain management, to improve the regulation on supply chain management, as well as to strengthen practices, supply chain management practices, as well as to provide an advisory service to supply chain management practitioners. In the financial accounting and reporting, here the National Treasury has developed a modified cash standard based on the standards of gender recognized accounting practices, and has also issued a manual to the partners to assist them with the compilation of their financial statements. Now the FOSAP reports on the payments within 30 days, this is the information that we collate on a monthly basis from departments with regard to the number of invoices and the value of invoices that are not paid, and we compile detailed reports to FOSAP. And this is the information from those FOSAP reports I discussed earlier. Then because, payments within 30 days is really becoming a problem, and so therefore National Treasury has initiated an activity where we are developing an invoice tracking system together with Stats South Africa. So as much as accounting officers are responsible to ensure that they have effective processes to pay the invoices within 30 days, we are also developing a system, not obligating departments to use it, but making it available. So if they don't pay the invoices on time, then I think oversight could ask good questions as to why there is a system available, why it's not being used. Then also we've also seconded the National Treasury officials, especially from the Office of the Accountant General, two departments, some of them to act as chief financials in the absence of CFOs. I think one of the departments that we've done that was the Department of Women and Children, and there has been one or two other departments that we have seconded officials, as well as internal audit staff that we have seconded to other departments to assist with financial management matters. That, Honourable Members and Chairperson, is basically my presentation, giving you a synopsis of PFMA compliance.
Right, thank you very much. Comrades, any questions to seek clarity on any of the issues presented? Please, we have to ask them questions. Also, to be unfair. Cannot be relied upon. I know that you know the role of National Treasurer, and sometimes, you know, same as what happened with the Auditor General, we get frustrated, but you are there to enforce, but why are you not acting, why are you not this, why are you not that? And if you look at the last slide, I was underlining, you know, the bullet point, regulations, plans, strategy, forum, reports, system. It's more about preparing guidelines and for departments to themselves then implement. You're not running this department. So when we look at the reports of the Auditor General, we ask ourselves, how effective is the National Treasurer? If one may just loosely put it that way, because you are there to ensure to enforce compliance. But when we look at the report of the Auditor General, we realize, hey, there is no compliance, there are gaps, especially around internal controls. And I will be interested, especially around internal control processes and systems, because if they, as the Deputy Auditor General indicated, audit almost everything throughout the year. But when you look at the report of the Audit Committee in the annual report, it is too telegraphic for my liking, insofar as it would assist oversight to understand the challenges within that entity. It is too telegraphic. And if you compare two reports, you may think there's actually a template, it's just cut and paste, you know. And we've raised this in the fourth parliament with National Treasurer. Can't we have that report to be more informative so as to assist us doing oversight, to understand what are the problems and the challenges that are there? Because the issues that audit committees raise would actually say to us, these are things that management should have corrected before the Auditor General even came. So the fact that the Auditor General found them, it's either the audit committee is not doing its work or management is ignoring the recommendations of the audit committee. So I think for me it's a very important area that I'm sure, like my colleagues, I'm still stretching out for a proper question, but yeah, maybe you can come in the meantime. But yeah, those are the things I wanted to raise.
Thank you, Chair. If time allows, it's actually good because we do want to spend quite a bit of time on fruitless, wastefully irregular expenditure, etc. But I don't think we're going to get to it. Chair, it is disappointing. I see even the cameras have gone. I understand there's an opening on generations now. I don't even get my screen test. But I'm sure that over the next couple of months, the committee members are going to engage with us vigorously on some aspects. Members shouldn't worry. I sweat a lot because I'm diabetic and fat, so don't worry. I can answer the questions. You don't have to go slow on me. See if I can start off with the IFMS project. Maybe Lindy on my left-hand side, she's the lady in charge, so I'm going to tell you about it, but if you want to fire somebody, then she's the one that must go. What we have done here, just to give some of the new members background, quite a while ago, the idea was first started in 1999, something that's not obviously unique to South Africa. Most countries have gone that way to say we have to have one system for government, one integrated system that does everything. So it's not just an accounting system, not just an HR system, not just a payroll, not just a supply chain. All of them must be in one system. We got approval from Cabinet in 2002 that we could go ahead and develop this system, and we actually started roundabout in 2005. It's a joint venture between us, the DPSA, DPSA is there because they are the custodian of HR-related policies and procedures. We are there because we are the custodian of procurement and financial policies and procedures. And then the third party is CETA. CETA is the implementation agent that the government uses when it comes to IT systems. At the time when approval was granted, we wanted to have as much as possible bespoke systems. Bespoke systems are systems that you develop yourself. You write the codes and you develop it from scratch, something new that you build. And the idea behind it at the time was it was going to be a flagship where we developed the IT skills in South Africa. We would become a leading country as far as those skills are concerned. Unfortunately, our education system is, or the number of people that we have that graduate that can go into those kind of professions is not enough. As you know, the number of learners that graduate from school with maths higher degree that is fairly limited, and then we have to compete with doctors, with lawyers, with accountants, etc. So it just never panned out, and even with the assistance of the private sector, we never had enough skills to adequately develop these skills. On top of that, there was a lot of delays. Departments weren't ready. Sometimes you can have the best system, but if you don't have the infrastructure, it doesn't work. If you don't have the bandwidth, then the system is going to be slow. If you don't have the right hardware, the system is not going to work. But for various reasons that were explained to Cabinet, it just never got off the ground. In the end, it got so slow because we already had a stage where this system had, had we done everything right from the start, it should have been implemented already. And we've passed that date. And as a result of that, about a year and a half ago, the project was moved to be under the direct curatorship, if I can use the word, of the Office of the Accountant General. We've made a number of changes. Most important one was to recommend to Cabinet that having a number of bespoke systems is not never going to work. Now, there were five modules: HR, payroll, finance, supply chain, and business intelligence. Under supply chain, there was five more. There was demand management, there was assets management, there was, I can't remember, acquisition. All in all, there's nine. So if you have nine different systems, each one must interface with one another. So it's 9 times 9 interfaces, 81. Then each one must interface with the old legacy systems, of which we have four. It's 81 times 4, it's 364 interfaces that you need. And it just, you know, when, once you actually think about it, although we had a very good idea at the time, it's just not feasible. And therefore we made the recommendation that we must change to what we call vanilla tier 1 single COP solution. If I can just explain it, vanilla, the IT people explained it to me, vanilla is just like the ice cream that you buy. Vanilla is plain white. And there's not chocolate chips inside, there's not blueberry ripples or anything like that. It's just plain. You just want a plain system that can do the work, so it's vanilla. Single means it's one system, we don't want two or three or four, one system. Tier 1, there's only four or five Tier 1 IT ERP solutions in the world as described by Gartner. Gartner is the IT experts. Mostly it's organizations like SAP, Oracle, Sage, Microsoft, those kind of organizations. So we want a big organization. That I think the description is they must have clients of more than $10 billion to qualify as a tier one. So we want to be sure that we don't get something that's still in development phase. It must be something that works. And the ERP is the enterprise wide. It's for the whole. It covers the whole system. That has now been approved. We are working. There's a tender that has been issued, but we are relooking the tender. It will go out again to select this ERP solution, and after that we will roll out. The current cost and timing is based on the last estimates that was given to us by CETA before we changed. So the last time we spoke to CETA, they said that by 2021 they will be done. We're sticking to that timeline. CETA said that the whole project will cost $4 billion. We're sticking to that cost. Although we hope to do it quicker, sooner, and for lower cost. But that's the amount that were communicated to Cabinet, and we're sticking to that. So the last system, the last department will be operational in 2021. The rollout will start next year already. We have spent so far $1 billion of the $4 billion. It's not a lot of money, Chair, by the way. People might think it's a lot. It is a lot of money, obviously. It's more than what I earn in a month. Maybe even more than what I earn in 2 months. But
in the context of having a system that works for the whole of government, it's not out of line with what the rest of the world is paying at all. You know, so it's very much in line. So, Chair, it's one of the projects that the committee must take note of. It, as I say, not because it's a big project, not because it's been delayed or all of those things, but simply because it's so important to the country. We can do so much more in terms of information, in terms of reporting to you, in terms of managing. Some of the members have mentioned that there's too much red tape. A system like this can take away some of those red tape because it will empower people to do more things. What we want to do, for example, is at the moment it's difficult if you are in a remote area, if you are an educator, for example, in a small rural area and you want to take leave, it takes sometimes even months to fill in a form, send it to head office, form gets lost, etc. Same when you're ordering equipment. So what we want to do is we want to equip people so they can use your smartphone. You've got the technology, you know there's networks all over the place. You just punch in an SMS, you send it off and somebody, it will go on the system, somebody will authorize and it will automatically be delivered to you. But all of that will take time, so we need somebody to drive us. But we are confident with that we are on the right track now as far as that is concerned. Chair, as far as the question about why National Treasury is not acting faster, remember when the PFMA was developed, we actually wanted a model where responsibility would go to the various departments. And we tried to write it in that way. Even the MFMA is even more empowering. A lot of power lies with the municipal manager, the mayor, etc. The same, a lot of power lies with the director general and the minister, etc. in the department. Over the years we've seen that, and that's why we've only built in some escape clauses, as I mentioned earlier in the PFMA, just to be, you know, if things go wrong then we can intervene, like Section 100 for example. But generally we don't want to take over that role. We are very conscious of the fact that National Treasury is often seen to be a big brother that's interfering with other people where it's not our responsibility. We feel it is our responsibility. If the finances of the country is at stake, it is our responsibility and we need to intervene at some stage. But unless it's really an urgent matter, we would not do it. We would rather intervene in other ways, like the cost-containing measures that we issue, to say here are some guidelines that you can follow that will help and assist you in managing your finances better. And if some departments are not complying, then we will make it a rule and say everybody from now on must comply, even though it's very bad for us because we have to stay in those poor hotels, can't get good night's sleep. But we do try and set an example. But, Chair, I can assure you that when the time comes, when it's really necessary, we will act, as we have seen. Of course, that requires Parliament to approve it. It's not something we just decide, well, we don't like this department, we can intervene. Cabinet must give us the go-ahead before we can do it. Then as far as reporting on controls are concerned, specifically as far as the Audit Committee is concerned, you're absolutely right, it is a template that has been provided to them. But we must understand the template is not there to provide basic guidance, to say these are the minimum things that you must say. It doesn't prevent the Audit Committee from saying more than that. You know, and we will this year issue a little bit more guidance to tell them or to help them understand that they are free to say more than what they say. The one thing that we are concerned is that it would seem from the number of failures, and also if you read the report of the Audit Committee chairperson and you compare it to the audit outcome that was reported by the Auditor General, we do find instances where they contradict. Now, the Auditor General is an independent third party, so we tend to rely more on their words simply because they're independent. They've got nothing to gain by, you know, by qualifying a department. So it is a concern that we think that sometimes the Audit Committee is not fully appreciative of the role that they play and the level of detail that they can go into and information that they can request. It might seem as if they don't have all the information available to them. And therefore we will, during this year, strengthen that. We're also going to look at strengthening the role of internal audit to make sure that, because like the Auditor General provides you with information the same way internal audit should provide the Audit Committee with information. So we are looking at capacitating them a little bit more. And so we will strengthen the reporting framework. Chair, I'm not sure if Lenny, if you want to add something on IFRS. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I hope the response is shorter. Just for interest sake, I think it was alluded to also in the previous presentation that there is part of your model that you use, if not the whole of it, is borrowed from a Canadian model. For interest sake, does the rest of Africa follow suit, or each country just chooses whatever Western country that they feel attracted to, and there's no standardization in the continent? And also, just for interest sake, do you have a continental body where Auditor General and staff or treasury where you need to standardize? Because when all is said and done, I always feel concerned when we import things from the first world and try and, you know, panel beat them to suit African conditions.
With regard to the capability maturity model, we just use the concept of the model. We've basically worked the other modalities to suit us, to basically in terms of our legislation and taking cognizance of the financial management in South African public sector. So it's just the ideas, but it's totally customized for South African circumstances.
I can just add to that, Chair, bearing in mind that I've now been given a time limit, I'll just say the Auditor General can speak for herself, but they do belong to an international body that, InterSci, etc., that makes sure that they all do the same kind of thing. Ourselves, as I said earlier in my presentation, Lindy is part of HSB, where we look make sure that all government across the world is the same. But closer to home, we have, similar to what we have, SADC kind of organizations, we have what we call ESAC, Eastern and Southern African Association of Accountants General. We meet regularly. We have conferences together. Our training needs are comply universally between our countries to make sure it's unique to us. Chairmanship this year is with us because it rotates every year. This year it's with us. Next year it will be Tanzania. Last year it was Botswana. But that's unique to us, so we develop training, etc., and norms and standards specific to our countries in Eastern and Southern Africa.
And here also the last ESAC conference when we did a presentation on the capability maturity model itself, where at least three African countries that were interested in having a look at the model once we have finalized it. I think Botswana and Tanzania were one of those countries. So they also expressed an interest to perhaps roll it out in those particular countries as well.
Right. I think that's the international body. You also have an African chapter, AfroSci. Yeah, okay, yeah, all right. Right, I'm looking at my time, and I wanted to say maybe the issues around unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure, as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure could be combined together with the briefing on supply chain management next week. Would that be fine, comrades? Next week, Tuesday, Wednesday. We're ready enough for the day in terms of information. Well, we would like to thank National Treasurer once again and the Auditor General's office. As always, when we start with the process of hearings, you are on our side, assisting us with the expert information. Tomorrow we will still be having the Auditor General's office that will facilitate our discussion on the review of the strat plan. The objective thereof is to help us understand and go through what was planned in the fourth parliament for the 5 years, so that sometimes before we start with the hearings early in October, we could have a straight plan session where we say, let us plan now for the next 5 years for ourselves. And I suppose National Treasurer will also be here tomorrow. Oh yeah. And I think before we receive the annual report, we have a whole list of unauthorized expenditure that the committee needs to process. National Treasury, I'm sure, and Tommy will have communicated or will communicate. As always, we'll be happy to have your notes. If we can have them at least a week before so that members can have them, go through them, and do some bit of additional research so that when you come to present, we can effectively engage on them. I think what we'll do, Tommy, we'll supply National Treasury with a date for each of the departments so they can know which one to prioritize so that we... I know there are those that we already have. We'll make them available to members and we're going to start with them so that we can have the process. Right. I think we can call it a day and then we'll meet tomorrow. Don't meet tomorrow. What time are we starting? 9? Tomorrow is starting at 9 o'clock, same venue with the same stakeholder again. Thank you very much.